Ahea o ko e ko ka aha. I nā he kuleana i mua o kea, aha, ho o kolo kolo ki e ke hanahano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E nao e mai, e maleo mai, i lohe ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. I noho I lalo. Please be seated.
Please call the case. All right, good morning, Mr. Collins, Mr. Goff, and Mr. Nakashima. Are you all ready to proceed today? Very well. Mr. Collins, we're going to, you've reserved 15 minutes for rebuttal. We'll have a warning light for you 15 minutes in. You'll be followed by Mr. Goff, who will be speaking for 13 minutes. We'll give you a light at that point, and then Mr. Nakashima for 17 minutes. We'll give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. It's all very complicated. We should write it out for you, and then finally back to Mr. Collins. So please proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice and Associate Justices, aloha ai olo olo ai, ka aha ho'o kolo kolo, aloha and may it please the court. The world is facing a climate emergency. The climate is changing in ways that pose an existential threat to humanity. There's hope. Human activity is the cause of this unfolding breakdown, and therefore it can be the halt to this breakdown. The legislature has adopted a number of policies aimed at supporting global efforts to halt and reverse human-caused climate change. Among those policies is HRS 2696B, mandating that the Public Utilities Commission consider the effect of the state's reliance on fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions. The committee report adopting this policy stated that it found, quote, that these adverse conditions carry with them hidden costs that are not always considered by the PUC. This measure will assist in reducing the state's reliance on fossil fuels by requiring the commission to factor in the hidden and long-term costs of the state's detrimental reliance on fossil fuels when exercising its statutory authority, end quote. Instead of carrying out this mandate, the commission expressly and unapologetically removed from consideration any of the hidden and or long-term costs of the state's detrimental reliance on fossil fuels by unjustifiably considering only Hawaii Gas's unsupported statement regarding greenhouse gases emitted at the very tail end of the generation process. For decades, Hawaii has relied upon a local method of creating natural gas by using a common byproduct of the petroleum oil refining process called naphtha. Naphtha is used in a wide variety of household and industrial solvents and is the base component of many plastics as well as polyester fiber. In Hawaii, it has been used to synthesize natural gas, island ingenuity. Hawaii Gas, however, is seeking to replace this locally invented method of not wasting any oil and replacing it with fracked natural gas from the U.S. mainland. It has convinced the Commission that it may satisfy its mandate to consider the long-term and hidden costs of reliance on fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions by ignoring all of the fossil fuel and greenhouse gas emissions fracking entails against the fossil fuel and greenhouse gas emissions that synthesizing naphtha locally.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Collins, but I wanted to get clear about your analysis in terms of the method that's being used by the PUC to calculate greenhouse gas emissions. Now, if I understand from your materials that you're advocating the use of the CAS system as opposed to the PAS system, right? Is that correct?
Life of the Land and Kale Maile Ali'i did advocate in the proceeding to use the consumer-based accounting system.
Okay. And so your focus at this time is simply on the fact that the PUC limited consideration simply to greenhouse gas emissions locally and did not take into consideration the cost of the greenhouse gas emissions if you include the liquid natural gas that was produced through fracking? Is that your point?
Well, I think the broadest contention is that the commission's method appears to be whatever Hawaii Gas says is the greenhouse gas emissions comparison is the analysis. And in this particular case, what that did was it excluded from consideration any of the greenhouse gas emissions that occur in the process of obtaining the fuel and bringing it to Hawaii.
Are you taking a position as to what method they should have used?
Well, whatever method that the commission uses, it has to consider the hidden and long-term costs of reliance on fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions. So using a consumer-based accounting system that includes the life cycle would include all of those things. There may be others. I have represented community groups before the Public Utilities Commission where other utilities have hired earth scientists that apparently as their full-time jobs do life cycle analyses. So it's not very complicated. I know there are different ways of doing it, and we are not advocating that this court tell the Public Utilities Commission which method to adopt. However, the Public Utilities Commission cannot do what it did in this case, which is to basically bracket out all of the hidden and long-term costs of reliance on fossil fuels.
What's your response to their argument that there's a federal constitutional Commerce Clause problem in this case, if they do that, or with interpreting the statute the way you feel it should be interpreted?
Well, as we noted in our briefs, the Commerce Clause argument is a little bit troubling because if the court were to adopt that, in essence, it would be saying that the Public Utilities Commission could not regulate anything that ever involved interstate commerce, which I guess in a way would be good because it would reduce Hawaii's contributions of greenhouse gas emissions because Hawaii has no fossil fuels in Hawaii. But I think in a reasonable sense that it doesn't follow from the case law.
Yeah, I have trouble even following the argument. I mean, aren't those cases talking about controlling conduct in another state? How is Hawaii controlling conduct if it's considering the life cycle of a specific resource that they're using to generate gas?
Well, I think what's implied, although we don't obviously agree with it, is that if the Public Utilities Commission were to consider and be aware of what the hidden and long-term impacts are and then possibly adjust its approval in the rate proceeding, that somehow will cause Hawaii Gas or other utilities to not do some kind of economic activity outside of the state. It's fairly remote, but trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the argument and trying to understand that somehow it has some kind of impact on something that's going on outside of Hawaii. But, the Dormant Commerce Clause issues are really issues of one state coming up with a price list for commerce occurring completely outside of the state. I mean, those are the kinds of cases.
I mean, doesn't the statute, it just says that they shall consider. Are you aware of other cases that say a statute that says a regulatory body shall consider impacts can be can pose Commerce Clause issues?
I found no cases.
Very well. Could I ask you just to address one other issue that raised by them, which is the issue of standing as to whether the entities that you represent have sufficiently demonstrated standing in this matter?
Sure. Well, first, of course, our position is that the case law indicates that incorporation by reference in briefs is disallowed, and to that extent, we believe that they waived that argument. But to the extent that the court will consider that,
I'm sorry. What do you mean by incorporation by reference?
Well, in the Hawaii Gas's answering brief, instead of making the arguments related to standing, they incorporated
Actually,
by reference.
They opposed your motion to intervene, correct?
They did. They opposed the
they
motion
opposed.
To participate. Yes.
They didn't appeal the grant of participant status.
That's right. There was no cross appeal filed.
And standing is not a jurisdictional issue.
That's well.
It's a prudential issue.
That's
so
correct.
It's an issue of whether we choose to consider it or not, even if they didn't appeal it.
Yes, Your Honor. And to the extent there are jurisdictional issues, in the Helco case, the three items that I guess you would consider to be jurisdictional was there a contested case hearing, was there a final decision, and was there compliance with the agency rules? And in this case, there was a contested case hearing, the rate-making case. There was a final decision, which is the order that was appealed, and there was compliance with the administrative rules. So for jurisdictional purposes, at least according to Helco,
Of appellate standing, it's whether you were actually you are an aggrieved party. You participated, and whether you're an aggrieved party.
Yes, Your Honor. In the case of Jordan v. Hamada, person must be aggrieved by a final decision and had to have participated. In this case, Life of the Land and Kale Maile'ali'i are aggrieved by the final decision. And they did participate.
So a party who had no ties to Hawaii whatsoever, if they attempted to come into one of these proceedings, how would we – is there a limit that standing would place on them? Or if – where would be – where would the point of analysis be if a party who had literally nothing to do with Hawaii tried to intervene in a PUC proceeding? Would they have standing? Because if they said, you know, we're affected by climate change and this is going to – this project will impact the environment, therefore we want to participate. Is there a standing analysis at that stage? Does it come in later? How would that work?
Well, I think, I think in that hypothetical of somebody that had no connections whatsoever to Hawaii coming in and making a claim, I think the first issue is that whether or not this would be the appropriate forum to adjudicate their claims. Would the PUC allow somebody who has no connection to Hawaii in? I don't know, and what the basis for that would be. I would have to see that specific case. Well, I guess it would depend on what the claims are. Probably not, but there may be instances where somebody might have sufficient.
What if the United States government, what if Congress chose to pass a law that said that each state shall regulate greenhouse gas emissions and the Department of Justice shall have the power or jurisdiction to enforce all of these environmental laws? Would the Department of Justice then have standing? In other words, that's not the case before us.
That's right. And I actually think that the United States probably does have standing, even absent Congress passing a law to intervene in a PUC proceeding to enforce federal environmental laws.
Whether they're allowed to participate or not would be sort of where we would be making the decision about whether someone is an appropriate party or not. Once they're in, then there is standing. Is that essentially your – once they're in, participate. If they're an aggrieved party, then they have standing for purposes of appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Yes. And in this case, it's not even argued that the Public Utilities Commission made a mistake by allowing Life of the Land and Kale Maile'ali'i to participate. In fact, the arguments responding to the due process claims specifically say, well, they got their due process because they were allowed in. So it's one of these things where it's like, well, they shouldn't have standing, but on the other hand, they weren't deprived of due process because they were admitted to participate. So in this particular case, it's the standing issue I don't think is I think it's if it hasn't been waived because of the formalities of the rules, substantively the arguments themselves defending the due process argument waives or stops their ability to make that claim.
Mr. Collins, do you feel that the greenhouse gas emissions should be considered in every rate case?
The statute does require whenever the commission is looking at capital improvements or operations that they are required to quantitatively or qualitatively look at greenhouse gas emissions.
Rate cases don't necessarily consider capital improvements. I'm just talking about a rate case. So do you think in every rate case the PUC has to consider greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, the statute includes operations, not just capital improvements, but also operations. And
so
the operations.
A rate case, in your opinion, includes operations?
It does include operations.
Okay, let me ask you this. You relied on 269.6B as evidence that the legislature intended for the PUC to consider greenhouse gas emissions, not just in Hawaii. And when we look at the particular sentence that you're relying on, the statute requires that the PUC consider the effect of the state's reliance on fossil fuels on price volatility, export of funds for fuel imports, fuel supply reliability risk, and greenhouse gas emissions. And you're saying it does, greenhouse gas emissions does not limit it to the state of Hawaii. Is that your argument?
That the analysis of which greenhouse gas emissions to analyze is not limited to those that are emitted in Hawaii.
Say that again.
So that the analysis of greenhouse gas emissions on whatever the activity is not limited to those emissions that are emitted in Hawaii.
Okay, so the greenhouse gas emissions is the last in a list of different things that a commission must consider. So should the commission also consider export of funds for fuel imports, not limited to Hawaii, fuel supply reliability risk? Does it make sense that the legislature intended for the PUC to rely on all those things, to evaluate all those things outside of Hawaii? Because greenhouse gas emissions is included in that list.
Well, I mean, just looking at it, definitely price volatility has to include stuff that occurs outside because, again, there's no indigenous source of fossil fuels.
By the same token, fuel supply reliability. You're looking at what's happening, where you get the supply from. You're looking at the mainland and other locations outside of the state.
And the export of funds for fuel imports. You would be asking the PUC to look at the export of funds, what another state, their export of funds is what I'm talking about, not how what other states affect Hawaii. You're talking about greenhouse gas emissions nationwide. So why shouldn't you, say you get the fracked natural liquid gas from Oklahoma. You're looking at the fuel supply reliability risk of Oklahoma or the price volatility in Oklahoma because you're asking for greenhouse gas emissions worldwide, aren't you?
Well, I think it's a little bit different, partly because in 2007, as we had mentioned, when the task force on greenhouse gas emissions, the legislature created the task force that eventually proposed this provision. In that, it specifically said that they wanted to look at the hidden and long-term costs of greenhouse gas emissions and that when analyzing greenhouse gas emissions, these sort of artificial barriers end up excluding things that happen outside of Hawaii, and so it looks like something is very green when in fact it's really not. And so,
what artificial barriers are you talking about?
When you only look at emissions that are emitted within the state.
Well, you're talking about not just emissions, but other things that other states do that affect fuel supply reliability. So you're saying based on this task force, even though the statute reads a certain way, you can separate out greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, each of these do consider things outside of the state of Hawaii, but in different ways. The fuel supply reliability risk is one that definitely takes into account markets, probably globally.
That's how it affects Hawaii. And we're talking about greenhouse gas emissions, not only that affect Hawaii, but nationwide. And is that correct?
Well, globally.
Globally.
Uh-huh. I would say the one that has the least global analysis would be the export of funds for fuel purposes, because that one is really inward looking. But the other ones actually, if you only confined it to activity that occurred solely within the state of Hawaii, you wouldn't be able to make any determination about fuel supply reliability risk.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Collins. Let's say if there was a project, a windmill project, just outside the 3-mile nautical state border, and the windmills were going to bring electricity into Oahu, to what extent would the PUC be required to consider greenhouse gas emissions? Would they have to consider the greenhouse gas emissions that are result from the construction of the manufacturing of the windmills themselves?
Well, just in my experience with the PUC, other utilities have hired firms in the United States that do this regularly, and they do consider all of those things, and it's done seemingly relatively easily, and can cross-examine them, and they can explain their exactly how they came to it, and it's all quantifiable, and they have industry standards about how they do that. So, of course, my position would be that anything within the 200-mile EEZ is within the jurisdiction of the state based on the Constitution, but that's probably for another case.
Can I ask you another thing? Has a gas company committed to use the byproducts of fracking to obtain their natural liquid gas?
Well, the problem in this case was that they refused to answer the question.
Well, they haven't, but you are, in your briefs, you're concerned with fracking.
Well, there's only so many sources in this world of liquid natural gas, especially coming from the U.S. mainland. So
the answer is yes.
The answer is okay. Yes.
I'm sorry.
I have a follow-up question. If isn't the purpose of fracking to extract oil from shale, to inject water into the earth to extract oil from shale?
Water and other chemicals.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is the liquid natural gas a byproduct of the extraction of oil from shale?
I think it gets released, which is why natural gas, I mean, a lot of it escapes, which is why natural gas is basically has the same carbon footprint as coal burning, because much gas escapes.
If the purpose of a particular fracking operation is to extract oil from shale, and company decides to purchase the liquid natural gas that is a byproduct of it, would the liquid natural gas obtained be a direct cause of greenhouse gas emissions if the purpose was only to extract oil and not to produce liquid natural gas?
I'm sorry, I don't think I fully understand. Are you asking, does it cause greenhouse gas emissions?
Would it be appropriate for the PUC to consider greenhouse gas emissions from an operation whose aim is not to produce natural gas, but whose aim is to extract oil from the shale?
Well, I think the PUC could easily consider that because there are experts that have accounting systems that basically capture. Should it? Well, they are required to analyze the hidden and long-term costs of reliance on fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions, and if those generate greenhouse gas emissions, they should consider that. I mean, how oil is extracted can vary greatly and have different greenhouse gas emission profiles.
Had been their initial aim and their primary aim, they still sold it. That's how it got on the market, and that's how it's ending up here. So it's still part of their profit.
Yes, Your Honor. I think one of the concerns with Kalei Mailele, and I know I'm running over my time, is that, you know, the problem with this is that in addition to all of these traditional and customary practices being impacted, as ratepayers, if the cost is then shifted to them, they're basically paying for the destruction of their own way of life.
And so what way did the PUC not, in your client's view, adequately protect the customary and traditional exercise of Native Hawaiian rights?
They made no findings at all. So that's part of the problem, is that there was no real consideration of it at all.
Okay.
One last thing, because I know I'm running out of time and I won't have time to rebut, is that just wanted to emphasize the point of error that hasn't been really discussed here, is that the methodology that the PUC used should have gone through rulemaking, and that the process that it used here was not an adjudicative
How do we even know that they utilized rule? I mean, I think part of your argument is that essentially the PUC just took at face value what the gas company told them, that it was going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. If they did that, then we really don't know if they even used it. It almost seems like you're making an assumption that they used the rule, and I'm not sure how they did it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Maybe prospectively.
Well, I think their argument is that because it went through adjudication, they can do whatever they want, and I think the concern is that, no, there are limits. If you are going to make a rule through adjudication, you actually have to – it has to be an adjudication. You can't just pull things out of a hat, and you can't just sort of make things. There has to be the elements of adjudication.
What statute requires or allows the PUC to promulgate rules under these circumstances?
Well, it's actually through case law. We cited that agencies can, if they go through the process of adjudication.
Which case relates to the PUC again?
It's one of the HECO cases. I can get you the citation. I may need to take a minute to do that. But that is that case. And I think the concern is the PUC, in many instances, like the competitive bidding framework, just basically opens a docket, adopts a rule, and closes it, and there's no adversarial interests. There's nobody's property interests. They're just doing rulemaking and calling it adjudication because they use the forms of a contested case. So if it's okay, I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
But I just want to be clear. Your rulemaking analysis has to do with the method of calculating greenhouse gas emissions, right, and that this is a agency statement of a general or particular applicability that will have a future effect. Is that your point?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Collins. We'll hear from Mr. Goff at this point.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Andrew Goff, and I represent the Public Utilities Commission. Your Honors, in this case, the PUC complied with both its statutory duties and the Constitution when it decided that Hawaii Gas's rate increase was correct. Appellants were afforded a meaningful opportunity to participate in this case to the extent of their constitutional rights. And also the PUC explicitly considered both fossil fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions in its decision. Now, there's no question that the PUC in its final analysis looked at only local greenhouse gas emissions. But I believe, as this court has indicated, that's actually an accepted methodology used globally. As the appellant has testified in his testimony and in his arguments, a PAS production-based accounting system is used both globally and by the Paris Agreement. Now, the appellant argues that only a CAS methodology greenhouse gases can only be effectively considered if a CAS methodology is applied.
How does it, if the legislature's intent was to require the quantitative or qualitative consideration of greenhouse gas emissions, how can the commission meaningfully assess that if it doesn't look at all stages of the production process? If it switches to a source which, although here in Hawaii may result in lower emissions in Hawaii, results potentially in higher emissions elsewhere, how is that effectuating the legislature's purpose in requiring the consideration of greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important to note in answering that question that a production-based accounting system is a methodology that is used globally. So if we're looking at a global impact of greenhouse gas emissions, this is what globally is used to account for greenhouse gas emissions.
But, you know, we decided a case recently, HELCO, and HELCO specifically addressed the situation, it would seem, and the specific language of the case. It talks about that the PUC, we required the PUC to substantiate its findings by addressing the hidden long-term environmental and public health costs of reliance on energy produced at the proposed facility. And then we defined what these costs included. And we said they include the potential for increased air pollution as well as greenhouse gas emissions. And then we said, as well as greenhouse emissions produced at earlier stages in the production process, such as fuel production and transportation. I, I almost think that your argument, in a sense, would require us to overrule HELCO.
Well, I would disagree with that, because in HELCO, the final issue was that the PUC didn't have a written decision, so there was no specifically and explicitly evaluating greenhouse gas emissions. So it was remanded to have that so that this court could look at the sufficiency of their greenhouse gas.
But we required them, when they did it, to look at the costs associated with fuel production and transportation.
That's correct. And in HELCO, and as well as in MECO, the situation was slightly different. This is a rate case, so there is no new proposed production facility. There's no new proposed...
Then why did the legislature include operations in the statute?
We're not saying that greenhouse gases should not be considered at a rate case level. In fact,
by your analysis, if the if a coal plant had been authorized before the passage of 269-6B, every time there was a rate increase request, this court would never, the PUC would never have to consider greenhouse gas emissions because it was just a rate case.
Well, no, that's not what we're arguing, because even in a rate case, greenhouse gases must be considered, and I think the statute and the precedent here is clear on that issue. What we're saying is that the PUC should be able to adequately tailor its greenhouse gas emission inquiry based on the analysis that is necessary.
Well, and that analysis, in the PUC's view, does not include any greenhouse gas emissions outside the borders of this state.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily across the board. I think in this case specifically.
So there is no rule then. You're going to do it adjudicatory case by case. So in a different type of case, you might consider greenhouse gas emissions outside the state.
What
kind of case is that?
Well, Your Honor, if this was the beginning of the process, if the utility company came in proposing a project, the analysis for approving that project is completely different than at the end the analysis for a rate increase. When they first come and propose a project, the PUC looks only at that project.
So how do you distinguish the coal plant question that I asked earlier?
I think it is a case-by-case basis, and it depends on
Can you help me with this case? Because I'm straining to see how the PUC considers a rate case like this, where there is a contention that liquid natural gas is so carbon emission intensive that it would mean there is a violation of the public trust or a violation specifically of the criteria that is outlined in 269-6B that requires consideration, and I would assume that also means appropriate use of discretion consideration of greenhouse gas emissions. Because if I understand correctly, you're saying because this case was initiated in 2013 and there were a couple of steps, first of all, the contract was approved, and then the contract was adjusted when there was a certain amount of SNG gas as opposed to liquid natural gas, that was it. That precluded, in a later rate analysis, which we have here, a consideration of the carbon emission cost of the use of LNG. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't say that it precludes anything, and I think that's...
Well, that's what I thought you said about this particular case. It's not appropriate to consider the cost of the LNG production outside the state of Hawaii. Isn't that what you said? In this case, it shouldn't be considered?
I'm not saying it's not appropriate and shouldn't be considered. I'm saying the methodology that was employed by the PUC is actually an approved methodology.
Well, fine. Then, I mean, you're helping me. So in this case, it was considered. The cost of carbon emissions with respect to the LNG production was considered. That's your point with respect to this rate making.
No, the PUC only looked at greenhouse gas emissions insofar as they are locally produced.
And your position is that they didn't have to go farther because it's a rate case? I'm trying to go back to the argument. I thought I heard you say this is different because it's a rate case as opposed to in the first instance. And I'm not sure I see that in the statute. If you could help me with that.
Your Honor, so when you're looking at a rate case, you're looking at an expanded breadth of analysis. You're not looking at just the project. And I think even the statute, as was pointed out earlier, requires kind of a balancing of multiple factors. And when you're looking at a rate case, that requires even more of a balance. You're not looking at just the project itself. You're looking at the full utility company corporation.
Not really. I don't follow you. Where's the balancing if you're not including the carbon cost of LNG?
Well, we are considering the greenhouse gas effects of
LNG. Your position is you are not considering the carbon emission costs outside the state of Hawaii. So let's be straightforward about this, all right? The PUC is not considering the cost of producing the LNG outside the state of Hawaii. Is that correct?
That's correct. In
all
this
right.
case, we are
then,
only looking at the local.
It would seem then that you have established a procedure that doesn't even comply with production-based greenhouse accounting, because as you said, that would include at least looking at the cost of carbon emissions of LNG.
I think there's two separate things. Whether you're looking at the cost of LNG and whether you're looking at the cost outside of the borders of the state.
How do you look at the cost of LNG in this docket?
In this case specifically,
yeah.
They looked at
how do you look at it?
That the fact that LNG, imported LNG, when it's being used, reduces the need to create synthetic natural gas. So locally, it reduces greenhouse gas emissions. So
but it doesn't seem to take into consideration what the carbon emission cost was when the LNG was taken out of the ground.
That's correct. And a production-based system does not look at that. And I think the point here is that the PUC needs the authority to be able to draw the line somewhere.
Is the state of Hawaii only affected by greenhouse gas emissions from the state of Hawaii?
No, but if we are looking globally, if we are looking at a global climate change analysis.
Are we a member of the Paris Agreement?
Hawaii has signed on to participate in the Paris Agreement, as this court has recognized in the Huhonua case.
Hawaii has, but do we know the states from which, do we know whether or not, you know, if everyone was measuring it, maybe it's one thing, but our legislature has said we need to consider greenhouse gas emissions. It didn't say we don't consider them outside the state of Hawaii.
That's correct, but our legislature has also said that we are going to comply and participate in the Paris Agreement. And if this court says that greenhouse gases cannot be considered with a production-based analysis, and that's what the Paris Agreement uses, then that's going to be, we're going to run into an issue.
What is the production-based analysis? Again, following up on what Justice Wilson was asking.
It only looks at greenhouse gases where they are produced. So,
do we produce them here? Do we produce LNG here?
Not LNG, but we do produce synthetic natural gas, and that was the analysis. We produce synthetic natural gas here, so using imported natural gas would lessen that production and therefore lessen the local impact.
Mr. Goff, if it turns out that the PUC is perpetuating the use of a fuel, let's say liquid natural gas, that has a carbon emission cost that far exceeds SNG, synthetic natural gas, far exceeds it. But we put a false carbon emission cost on the fossil fuel that we're using here because we just look at the way that the carbon emissions are produced here when SNG is produced. Doesn't that mean that the PUC could be incorrectly calculating, sounds like maybe even intentionally incorrectly calculating the carbon emission cost of the overall fuel? If in fact the LNG cost is so great, carbon emission cost is so great, that it far eclipses the carbon emission cost of SNG. So theoretically, isn't that possible?
Theoretically, yes, but also theoretically, this kind of
it's all theoretical right now because the PUC hasn't seemed to have put a value, a carbon emission value on the LNG yet, right?
That's correct, but the analysis conceivably moving forward would be done more thoroughly at the project initiation phase. And I think that's the point that we need. The PUC should have the authority to tailor the methodology that it uses to the analysis that it is being done.
I have a problem with that. You are saying that they use a particular methodology that doesn't include greenhouse gas emissions outside the state. But if the statute requires them to consider greenhouse gas emissions outside the state, shouldn't they be using a different methodology then?
Well, the statute doesn't...
I mean, we can't say they're using the methodology and therefore that they're right if the statute requires else.
I don't think the statute does require. Okay. It just requires that you consider either quantitatively or qualitatively. So there is built into the statute discretion for the PUC to choose whichever...
Their overall import of the legislation was to address issues related, it appears to be global issues. I understand there may be a technical argument for this kind of production-based system, but the legislature's intent, I think, as Justice Nakayama's question, seems to be broader than that. It seems to be that we're not just trying to decide whether Hawaii is narrowly within our state boundaries reducing the emissions, but whether there's a overall global reduction because of our activities. And how do you get – that's – you don't think that's what the statute was intended to require?
No, I think the statute does require – I mean, it definitely contemplates the use of fossil fuels, the reliance of the state on fossil fuels, and greenhouse gas emissions. And in this case, the PUC did also look at the reliance of the state's reliance on fossil fuels when it analyzed Hawaii Gas's energy efficiency programs and biogas programs. And so it's taking into account not only greenhouse gas emissions, but also reducing the state's reliance on fossil fuel emissions, which is the statutory mandate. Now, again, if we're going to look at global effects, then it does make sense to at least allow for a global PAS accounting system to be used. And the PUC should have the authority to, if we're looking at the beginning of a project, also closely scrutinize and use a CAS system if they feel that it's warranted.
Your position, if I understand, and we do need to move on to Mr. Nakashima, is there are different approaches that might be legitimate in the project approval stage as opposed to the rate making stage. Is that and one might be a PAS, the other might be the broader look. Is that the position of the PUC?
That's correct, Your Honor. The PUC needs the discretion to be able to draw a line somewhere, because even the CAS, if a CAS is mandated, then the CAS has its own criticisms. If we're looking at an entire life cycle analysis, it could actually disapprove renewable energy by looking constantly at, where the solar panels came from and how the solar panels were mined and the materials that were made. So there are limitations.
Aren't several states applying? You seem to be going after these different measures, but aren't several states, and they've been doing it for years, that they have set up standards looking at the life cycle, and there's actually tables and standards. There's a lot of peer review of this. So I'm concerned with you with this sort of, I guess what I'm hearing between the lines a bit is that this may be too difficult to do.
No, Your Honor. First, to your point, the states that you're talking about specifically say in their statutes that you will use a life cycle analysis, and that was not said specifically in this statute. If it was, then we would be having a different conversation. My point is that the PUC needs to be able to draw the line based on the analysis that it's doing. If it's looking initially at the project, just the project, then maybe it needs to look closer and apply a full life cycle analysis to the greenhouse gas emissions. If it's looking at the rate, there's many more factors that need to be factored in, and the PUC does have a mandate in the statute that it has to wrap up a docket within 9 months. So expanding
Excuse me, that sounds all fine, but until 2 or 3 years ago, to my knowledge, the PUC, I mean, it was in the Maui Electric case, was seemed to be the first time that greenhouse gas emissions were expressly considered. And now we're finding out that you're saying that today, I think it was the first time, at least that I learned, that you're saying, well, sometimes you will look at the generate. In other words, it seems like all the parties and even the court don't know exactly how you're proceeding. It seems to me, you know, there's an argument here that there needs to be rules. And are you folks working on rules so people know when you're going to apply this methodology to which situation, and if you're going to do it and challenge the production, you better do it at the very first step, because if you don't do it, you're out the door?
Well, I think that it can be done in an adjudicative session, and it was in this case, actually. The appellants were afforded the opportunity to argue and had full input on the methodology that they thought should be used instead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if I could follow up on Justice Pollack's question with respect to Article 12, Section 7, customary Native Hawaiian rights. Is there a difference in the application of that provision of the Constitution depending on whether it's a project approval stage or a rate-making stage?
I think that would depend individually on the argument that's being made from the Native Hawaiians. And I'm sorry, I do have to wrap up. But I do think, you know, in this case, if a Native Hawaiian came forward and said that their rights were being affected in some way, that also is a case-by-case basis that you would take a look at that time.
Very well. Thank you very much, Mr. Goff. Mr. Nakashima, and I will give you some time after when the light comes on, since we were asking questions of Mr. Goff that caused him to exceed his limit.
May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, good morning. My name is David Nakashima, and I represent Apelli Hawaii Gas. Your Honor, the Court already heard the undisputed evidence that in the rate case below, the PUC explicitly considered the impact on greenhouse gas emissions.
And made I'm so sorry. Please proceed.
And made specific findings that greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced in the state. Now, I understand the appellants dispute the methodology used and the fact that the PUC did not look beyond the borders of the state. But that's not what the statute requires, Your Honor. As the Justice already noted, HRS 269-6B simply requires an explicit consideration, which is exactly what the PUC did.
I'm sorry, requires what kind of consideration?
Explicit consideration of the greenhouse gas emissions. And that's exactly what they did in the decision and order when they found that greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced at the SNG plant. Now, as Justice Wilson, as you noted earlier, there's a difference between the PASS system and the CAS system. And from my reading of the appellant's briefs, they propose and are arguing for the alternative CAS system. But what the PUC did here is effectively adopted the PASS system by focusing on the site of generation for Hawaii Gas, which in Hawaii is the SNG plant. And that's consistent with what the constitutional right, which is in question.
How? Let's say that this wasn't gas, LNG. Let's say this wasn't fracking and methane. But let's say this was oil. Not considering how much the production of oil would result in greenhouse gas emissions, just limiting it to what the greenhouse gas emissions in Hawaii, how does that match the mandate of the legislature under 269-6B?
If I'm understanding the question correctly, I think what the PUC decided or found specifically was that by using LNG, Hawaii Gas doesn't have to produce as much SNG, which in turn decreases the emissions in the state. So I'm not sure if that addresses the how.
But it doesn't really, your position is it doesn't matter, even if the greenhouse gas emissions from LNG, from producing the LNG, you know, through fracking, it doesn't matter even if that would be 100 times as much as what's saved through conversion to SNG here. it doesn't matter. That's Hawaii Gas's position.
No, Your Honor, and I believe, Justice Nakayama, you pointed out that the oil which Hawaii Gas would use to create SNG is also produced or could potentially be produced through fracking as well. So if we're comparing SNG and LNG, they both have obviously a carbon footprint. We are reducing, and the PC specifically found that these LNG projects are reducing the greenhouse gas emissions in the state.
Where in the statute or the legislative history can you point that the legislature was only concerned with greenhouse gas emissions in Hawaii? I mean, isn't the import of this statute that there's a concern about climate change, which is, I believe, something that is generally viewed as a worldwide issue, not as one just related to a particular state? Can you point us to where in the statute or where in the legislative history the legislature intended to simply limit the analysis to what the impacts are in Hawaii?
Your Honor, I think the key language in the statute itself is quantitatively or qualitatively. I believe the legislature intended the PUC to have that discretion because, as this court in MECO also noted and recognized, science changes. And the constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment is defined by the present environmental laws of the state.
Let me just, since you're on the constitutional analysis, see if I follow you. So if we take the approach you're talking about, which is to just consider the carbon footprint that's produced by the locally produced energy, in this case, SNG versus LNG, you're saying we would produce less synthetic natural gas if we use LNG and use the formula that just looks at it locally. But if it turns out that that is a carbon analysis, a carbon cost that's less than it would be if you included LNG, and therefore the mix that's being used with LNG and NSG causes more carbon to be produced than the present mix that we have if we just consider it locally, and that contributes, therefore, more to global warming, wouldn't that affect subsistence rights, customary rights, under Article 12, Section 7, from the point of view of the effects on the environment?
Your Honor, if I'm understanding correctly, yes, there are competing methodologies.
I mean, would you agree that if all the coral died and all the beaches disappeared in Hawaii, that would affect customary and traditional Native Hawaiian rights?
Yes, Your Honor. But
again, and isn't that a reason why we want to know the true cost, the carbon emission cost of the energy mix that's being used here in Hawaii?
Well, I think it's important to remember, Your Honor, that as science changes and studies show this, the PUC has the discretion to adapt and to make rulings accordingly. And again, I'll go back to this rate case. The PUC specifically found that greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced in the state.
But they just relied on what you said. It almost is like a parrot. There's no analysis. There's nothing. There's no data. Are we just to accept what you say and they don't analyze it? Is that what you're asking us?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. But I believe that the PUC did analyze it. They adopted these procedures consistent with Chapter 91. This is a contested case, and this court held that contested cases are like litigation. It provides a high level of procedural fairness where the parties are supposed to develop the record through rigorous adversarial proceedings, and that's exactly what happened here.
Well, you obviously advocated well because the PUC adopted Hawaii Gas's analysis that all that needed to be considered was comparing SNG to LNG here in Hawaii. But the PUC and it appears that we're completely ignoring the legislative history that was even cited in our MECO case. The legislature said, the House Committee on Energy and Environmental Protection, when passing 269-6B, said, your committee finds that Hawaii is dangerously reliant on imported fossil fuel, which subjects the state and residents to increased air pollution and potentially harmful climate change due to the release of harmful greenhouse gases. Your committee further finds that these adverse conditions carry with them hidden costs that are not always considered by the PUC when it makes decisions regarding utility system capital improvements and operations. This measure, 269-6B, will assist in reducing the state's reliance on fossil fuels by requiring the commission to factor in the hidden and long-term costs of the state's detrimental reliance on fossil fuels when exercising its statutory authority. What could be clearer as to the legislature's intent that you're supposed to consider the greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels, that the PUC must consider them, and this in terms of the imported fossil fuels? LNG is an imported fossil fuel.
And Your Honor, I would reiterate that the PUC did consider explicitly that issue, that very issue of greenhouse gases. Again, if you're comparing SNG and LNG, they're both imported fossil fuels.
The concern of the legislature was increased air pollution and potentially harmful climate change due to the release of harmful greenhouse gases. The release of harmful greenhouse gases occurs through the production of LNG.
Your Honor, to that point, I would just submit that there is nothing in the record to show that if Hawaii Gas were to stop purchasing that LNG in question, there's nothing in the record to show that there would actually be a drop in that LNG production wherever it is purchased from. But we do know, looking at the state and the borders of our state.
You know what your argument is? Your argument, if I understood it correctly, is that it doesn't matter what we do here because it's not going to affect production on the mainland. That's what your argument is.
That statement is not entirely correct, Your Honor. I'm saying that the PUC did consider the issue of greenhouse gas emissions, and they've confirmed that emissions will be reduced at the SNG plant, which, by the way, has
was
a global impact.
Was it a qualitative impact or a quantitative analysis? I couldn't figure it out.
I would believe it's a qualitative analysis.
How is it qualitative? What's the quality of that analysis?
Well, I would say it's a good quality, Your Honor. But, I mean, the point is they looked at the issue, and they found that greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced in the state. This, again, Your Honor, the Challenge LNG projects, the PUC analyzed them, found that it is in the public interest to...
Mr. Nakashima, is there a way to obtain liquid natural gas outside of fracking? And Mr. Collins makes the point, you got this through without even saying where you're going to get your liquefied natural gas. So,
to answer your question, Your Honor, I believe the appellants in one of their briefs do acknowledge that LNG can be obtained through non-fracking sources. I'll defer to him on his brief.
But you're not saying how you're going to get it, and you got it through the PUC just by saying that you're going to import it, and we're not going to tell you where we're going to get it. Is that,
Your Honor,
fair or not?
Well, I think what the focus is that greenhouse gas emissions are being reduced here, and your specific question, I believe, is not part of the record, and I'm not sure why.
Did you get it through without saying where you're going to get? I mean, you didn't answer my question. You switched to a different answer.
I believe it's not part of the record, Your Honor. That's correct.
All right. So we've got a bit over, and are there other points you'd like to make in wrapping up?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to close, I want to make one final important point, and that is if this court were to vacate the decision in order and all the LNG costs are ultimately disapproved in the rate case below, that will have no direct impact on the actual LNG operations and fuel supply agreements. I think that's important to realize and remember that the appellants requested relief, which is my understanding the termination of the LNG operations, cannot be achieved through this appeal. We're talking about the rates that Hawaii Gas can charge its ratepayers in connection with its operations. But the actual, if you were to vacate this decision in order in this appeal, that it would have no direct impact.
The shareholders of the company or the owners of the company would bear these costs. Is that would be the effect?
That's correct, Your Honor. And if I may just add, there are other factors, and I believe, Justice Nakayama, you raised the fact that HRS 269-6B discusses other factors such as price volatility and fuel supply reliability. That is an important factor that was thoroughly discussed in the record because, as we noted earlier, Hawaii Gas produces SNG, and that is their main source. That is their main fuel that they provide, the utility service that they provide to its customers. and just because of the history, and I realize I'm going over, but just because of the history of the infrastructure, if anything were to happen to this neighboring facility, Par Hawaii, and the source of SNG, they would be without any utility service to provide to their customers, and they have an obligation to meet those demands. And so to address those concerns, to address the reliability risks at that time, they decided to diversify their fuel supply. But thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you for your argument. We'll hear from Mr. Collins in rebuttal.
Mr. Collins, you don't have to start with my question, but I'd like you to respond to that our decision would have no impact on the proceedings.
Oh. I thought you said it would have no impact on the production of oil.
No impact as to, as I understood it, would have no impact on any, either the rule, the rate change or the production order.
There's no evidence in the record to suggest that one way or the other, because the Public Utilities Commission decided that it didn't want to entertain any evidence related to that. So
I believe the question is responding to the very last point, which is even if we grant the relief you request, the plant will continue to operate because the authority for the plant was granted under a prior proceeding. What we're talking about here are the rates. So his point is what we will do is disapprove the recovery of the investment by the owners of Hawaii Gas, but it would not shut down, or could not, I guess, shut down the plant. What's your response to that?
Well, I think, first of all, the previous proceedings were interim proceedings, and so making it permanent was this proceeding. It wasn't exactly that the previous proceedings made a final decision, because it was in this rate-making proceeding that the interim basis became permanent. That's one issue. The other issue is that one of the things that the Public Utilities Commission does, and the consumer advocate advocates this all the time, is to make decisions in a way to signal to the market how to plan for the future. And so, okay, well, right now they can't do anything about it, but if these costs are disallowed, that will tell the people who are planning at Hawaii Gas that they need to change their act going forward. So just because everything can't be done instantaneously doesn't mean that this process doesn't allow for Hawaii to change its behavior.
It's okay for me to wear a fur coat because the animal is dead already?
That's exactly it. And I think actually that reasoning is actually one of the reasons why the present federal administration withdrew from the Paris Accords. That was one of the reasons. Well, us doing this isn't going to change anything. I don't think that's true, and it definitely doesn't help anything if you're not even trying. I wanted to point out to Section 6 of Act 234, which was that created the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Reduction Task Force that eventually proposed the changes in 2011. And the legislature, quote, sought, quote, to recommendations to minimize leakage or a reduction in emissions of greenhouse gases within the state that is offset by an increase in emissions of greenhouse gases outside the state. So the task force that proposed this specific law was tasked with looking at this issue of externalizing greenhouse gas emission costs outside of the state. So yeah, if you produce some kind of fuel in the same way, if you produce it outside of the state and you don't consider that production at all, it will always have less greenhouse gas emissions. It's the traditional negative externalization of costs, and that's exactly what the statute was designed to prevent. I also wanted to mention that it appears that the commission's argument is that a quantitative or qualitative analysis is solely in their discretion. So I was thinking, well, can a modern dance pantomime of greenhouse gas emissions satisfy a qualitative analysis? It seems like what the Public Utilities Commission is saying is yes, and that's totally absurd.
What's your response to Mr. Goff's argument that the issue or the appropriate analysis might be different in the initial approval phase as opposed to in the rate-making phase? So if I understood him correctly, he suggested that the appropriate time where the commission would look at the lifetime costs in the approval phase, and this phase is different considerations, multi-factors, and so the PAS might be the only appropriate way to do it. What's your response to that argument?
Well, I think the problem is that the commission has not, through rulemaking or through appropriate adjudication, signaled what is the methodology that they're using, when do they use that methodology, and instead it's whatever Hawaii Gas says is the greenhouse gas emissions is what is our analysis. And that does not satisfy the statute, and it doesn't satisfy the Administrative Procedure Act.
Well, it seems in this case the PUC was asked to consider what the cost of this energy use was, the energy use in this contract, and that's what the interveners were asking to do. Consider the true cost. It includes the carbon emission cost for the production of LNG before it gets to our state, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the PUC shut down that analysis and said we are not going to consider what the cost of LNG is from outside the state. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, and actually in the greenhouse gas emission world, this issue of not considering or using these legal boundaries of states or territorial boundaries has been one of the problems of accounting truly for greenhouse gas emissions.
Are you saying, I thought I heard you say that you don't know what kind of methodology the PUC used, but Mr. Goff seemed to argue that it was evident what methodology they used.
Well, it's not evident from the record. The methodology, at least in this case, was that whatever Hawaii Gas said was the greenhouse gas emissions were.
It's pretty clear that it was just measuring what was here, right? And not even the production, the greenhouse gas emissions for the production of the LNG, wherever it was produced.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What's your understanding of why the PUC wouldn't at least consider this? I mean, it seems from what Mr. Goth is saying that wouldn't be a problem if you were to reveal this information, allow it to come before the stewards of the energy system of the state of Hawaii. If you allowed this information to become public, it would only affirm the decision of the PUC that this is the best energy mix for the state if you consider overall the carbon cost emissions. What's your understanding of why the PUC wouldn't allow that to take place?
I can't really speculate about why individual commissioners did whatever. I do know that, being afraid of knowing what something is very telling.
I thought Mr. Goff said this was consistent with the Paris Accords. This is a methodology that's internationally recognized, including in the Paris Accords. Your response on that?
The PAS method, Your Honor, is what has been used in the Paris Accords, but that is not what was implemented in this case. What was implemented in this case was that Hawaii Gas told the commission what their greenhouse gas emissions were by limiting only to things emitted within the state, and that was it. There wasn't even a full PAS analysis.
So a PAS analysis would have required the production, the GGH emissions, greenhouse gas emissions at the time it was produced.
It would not have been limited to within the boundaries.
But what you're advocating for is some sort, you're not saying it should be PAS or CAS, you're advocating on behalf of your clients for some sort of life cycle analysis.
Well, they would like a life cycle analysis, but in the minimum, the commission must consider all of the greenhouse gas emissions. They cannot limit it to those emitted within the boundaries of the state.
And isn't that a continuing responsibility? I mean, what I'm hearing from the gas company is once they got their permit and from the PUC, once they do it at the initial stage, it seems like that's all they have to do. One would think that under the right of that citizens have to a clean and healthful environment under the public trust principles, that there would be some continuing duty, affirmative continuing duty, to make sure that even previous decisions were well-reasoned, well-informed, and relied on the best science.
Actually, the Public Utilities Commission does have a statutory power to investigate after they've made a decision. So they do have a continuing obligation, and they also do have the power to remedy or correct previous.
Anything further at this point, Mr. Collins, to wrap up for the court?
Your Honor, if I may conclude by quoting the California Supreme Court, the global scope of climate change and the fact that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases once released into the atmosphere are not contained in the local area of their emission means that the impacts to be evaluated are also global rather than local. For many air pollutants, the significance of their environmental impact may depend greatly on where they're emitted. For greenhouse gases, it does not. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to all of our attorneys. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku Iluna, please rise. Ua ho'o malolo ia mai ne kea aha ho'o kolo kolo kie ke hano hano. This Honorable Supreme Court is now recessed.